Hey everybody, welcome to Flurries and Films. This week we're doing Sunset Boulevard. Hit the music!
Woo!
Hey everybody, welcome to Flurries on Films. I'm Michael.
I'm Colleen.
And we're doing Sunset Boulevard. I'm going to read the description of this movie real quick. A screenwriter develops a dangerous relationship with a faded film star determined to make a triumphant return.
Yeah, and this film's from 1950, which I actually thought it was earlier, but...
Because of the black and white? Why?
I don't know. Yeah, maybe the black and white. I guess I thought it was like a 30s film, but it's not. No. Anyway, Michael, what did you think of this film?
There are things that I liked about it. I didn't totally get the main character all the time, and that was my biggest disconnect with the film. But it was interesting, caught my attention, you know.
I really liked this film, actually.
Whoa.
This might come as a shock. So, we've only talked to one person who's seen this, and she did not like it.
Who didn't like it?
Diane.
Oh, I know her.
Yeah, and... I was like really prepared to not like a long melodrama in black and white. And I just thought it was, I think I liked it for the wrong reasons. I thought it was just so,
I think our favorite part's going to
be
the same.
Silly and over the top and just like, just crazy. And I don't know. I was really into it the whole time. And the twist that made no sense. I was like there for it.
Well, that's going to lead into my dislikes actually. But... here's what I really, really fucking like.
What do you like?
Is our first segment, BAM.
Time for Sam.
Our cousin Samantha Norman is going to tell us all the facts about the movie, all the good ones.
Yeah.
And she won't leave out any bad facts.
But she's also going to do some trivia.
And she's going to do impressions, and she's going to tell a joke, and she's going to dance for us.
She's so pretty much the Robin Williams of our podcast.
So go ahead, Samantha.
I'm going to need more wine. So Sunset Boulevard is a 22-mile boulevard that follows the arc of the mountains that forms the northern boundary of the Los Angeles Basin.
So it's a long road.
It's a long road. It became known as the center of Hollywood as the first movie studio was built on it in 1911. It also is known for its active nightlife and street prostitution.
Cool.
Although the area was originally middle class and a lot of the workers lived there who worked at the film industry, with the success of movies and the money that it brought in, lavish homes and buildings were built in the neighboring streets.
They make a mention that in the movie where the main girl is like, my dad was a lighting guy and he was two blocks from the studio. Probably not a thing anymore.
So when Billy Wilder...
No, lights still exist. Go ahead.
...moved to America, and specifically L.A., he was fascinated by the world of movies, but he was most interested in these opulent and exquisite homes. Most were still being lived in by silent film stars who had been out of the film business for a long time. So basically, they're still living in this world in these beautiful, over-the-top houses, but they are just not a part of this industry anymore.
That is interesting.
And as Wilder put it, the parade had passed them by. So he started kind of imagining a story about a washed up star living in this world of exquisite opulence. I used both of your words.
Thank you so much.
Twice.
I did. Along with a short story and some personal tales from silent film stars, the screenplay for Sunset Boulevard was created. So
what personal anecdote of a film star would make it into this?
So there's like a lot of talks about, is this based off of a real person?
Yeah.
And like bits and pieces were, but they were very specific in saying that this is not based on one specific person.
I think I was thinking a lot about this. That actually would make, it must have been so interesting because, you know, nobody had movies at home. They just saw them in the theater and then they'd be gone forever. So these film stars were the only cool medium you could see. They must have been such a big part of life and then actually be irrelevant, right? You never saw these silent films again. So why? Of course they would be that forgettable after being the biggest thing in the world so quickly. Isn't that weird? Like, that is weird.
Well, and I think we know the film industry nowadays, but especially with all of these older films we've been seeing, like, they would make so many films, especially during the silent.
And they would just go away forever.
Yeah, and so, like, And they didn't realize how big this medium was going to be. So just the amount of money that came in and the amount that this industry just became like just overwhelmed and surprised.
Right.
And then,
people say now, whatever happened to Josh Hartnett? But I can just watch Pearl Harbor anytime. I own it. So
well, we've watched a couple of silent films. I wish a couple of the films we watched went away forever. Go away, Kat.
That's fair.
Kat, go away.
She just wants to be part of it, man.
I'm going to hit her.
Gloria Swanson was a big star during the silent film era. She was actually one of Paramount Pictures' biggest stars and worked often under the direction of Cecil B. DeMille.
What's her name? What's her? Gloria Swanson?
Gloria Swanson.
Hey, hot or not? Gloria Swanson.
Hot.
All right. Continue, Sam.
What about you?
Not hot.
Well, okay.
That's why I'm surprised.
We'll talk later.
Okay.
Although she did get some jobs once films transitioned into talkies, her star would dwindle and she would eventually move on to TV and theater. When Sunset Boulevard was being cast, her good friend, George Cukor, I'm assuming, suggested Swanson for the role to Wilder. Wilder requested she come in for a screen test, and Swanson almost immediately rejected it because she was so insulted that they would even ask her to do a screen test.
I love it.
Cukor, however, told her, if they want you to do 10 screen tests, do 10 screen tests. If you don't, I will personally shoot you. She would do the screen test and eventually would get the role of Norma Desmond. The film needed a mansion for Desmond, and they would find it at 641 South Irving Boulevard. It was built in 1924 by William Jenkins for $250,000. Its second owner was John Paul Getty.
Oh.
Who purchased it for his second wife. She would rent it out to Paramount for use in this film. The fee for renting it was to build the pool that they needed for the plot. Oh. And then remove the pool if she didn't like it.
Did she like it?
She did. Okay. However, they didn't build it correctly, so it didn't circulate water. So the pool would remain empty for the rest of its life. It was actually used in the film Rebel Without a Cause in its empty state as like an empty pool the kids would hang out at. Both the pool and mansion were demolished in 1957 for the Getty Oil office building that still stands there today.
Cool, cool.
The film originally had a different opening. In the original start, the body of Joe, audience, you'll learn more about Joe, I'm sure, when they start talking, is rolled into the morgue along with several other corpses. The corpses, in voiceover, start discussing how they died. They then ask Joe, who responds, drowning.
Well, so there's like a choir of dead people, like, all chatting?
Yeah, so picture, like, you're looking at just a pile of, or not pile, that sounds bad.
You know how morgues are.
At a heap, let's say.
A row of corpses.
Heap
in
of deadies.
The morgue.
Yeah.
And then you're just hearing the voices. And
that's weird.
So they ask Joe how he died. He responds, drowning. One says, where did you drown? The ocean. And he replies, no, a swimming pool.
Oh, and then
the man says, a husky fellow like you. And he says, well, I had a few extra holes in me, two in the chest and one in the stomach. And the man replies, you were murdered? And Gil says, yes, I was murdered.
Unnecessary.
When the movie was in preview, the audience found the opening scene hilarious, which was not supposed to be the point at all.
That is the reaction I have to some of this film when I'm not supposed to, though. But
so the release was actually delayed 6 months so a new opening could be shot.
I actually really liked the opening.
So let's talk about the opening. So the opening, which I did not see this movie, so this is just what I'm guessing from what I've heard, is of a floating body, and it's actually shot through the pool up at the body, and then you can see the police.
They started a season of Archer like that as well.
Standing upside the pool. So you're like at the bottom of the pool looking up at all.
But
he
doesn't really die, spoilers.
Sure. Wilder wanted to shoot this like angle, which is really cool, but was not possible to shoot clearly with the camera in the water because
of water.
Water messes it up.
Totes.
So they created an ingenious plan. They placed a mirror on the pool's floor and then they shot at an angle.
Whoa.
So the camera is never in the water and what the audience is seeing is just the mirror's reflection.
That's awesome.
There was some couple mirror things in this movie and I remember like old time movie fans are like crazy for mirror stuff.
Fucking love mirrors.
So This, you just love mirrors?
Fucking, that's awesome.
So, this.
Why are they reversed left and right, but not up to down? That's a question.
Well, why?
I don't know.
Oh my God. This is the other day. I overheard somebody talking about the moon landing and how it's faked. And I was like, haha, that's so funny. He's like, and then nobody ever went to the moon again. And I was like, why
didn't they go?
Why didn't they? I'm like, I know that's crazy.
No one ever went.
It's been a long time. Anyway, just asking questions, audience.
I mean, did they go when, yeah, calculators were the big thing? Weird, huh? Interesting.
Just to be clear, this podcast does believe that we landed on the moon. Okay. Anyway.
But it is weird.
Back to Sam.
Go on.
That was a really good segue.
So this film would be known for its cinematography and would often be compared to another film the cinematographer did called Double Indemnity.
Oh,
which came first?
Double.
Oh, okay. Makes sense.
I believe. This one's 1950. In fact, he used one technique in both films. To create a moody effect, he would sprinkle dust into the air so that it would be caught by the light and give a little haze to the scene.
Good effect.
Yeah, I actually really liked the cinematography in this movie. I thought it was very effective.
I read one quote by a film historian who was talking about how those films can be compared because this is both a noir. That's, you know, noirs are very dark and like shadows and whatnot, but both take place in such bright, like LA and sunny places.
Sure.
So like the cinematography in these films are very important. Cecil D. or B. DeMille was a big time silent film director, and he was asked to make a cameo in this film. He agreed, but asked for $10,000 and a new Cadillac. They agreed, and he did the cameo. However, when Wilder went to DeMille to confirm that a close-up was okay, DeMille charged him another $10,000.
Wow.
At the time of filming, DeMille was working on his film, Samson and Delilah, and they actually filmed his scene on the set of his movie.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's cute.
I thought it was an interesting choice that they chose a real director.
He was good.
Yeah, he was
really
good.
Wanted could've to do a lot of like pull in, like a lot of the facts I read that I didn't really bother going into because let's be honest, your audience probably wouldn't know who these people were because I did not.
Nor would we.
Yeah. Was that they wanted to bring in a lot of silent actors onto.
Oh, and like, were the people in her Bridge Game real silent actors?
Yes, one was Buster Keaton.
Buster Keaton, yeah.
I didn't recognize them at all. Yeah. Oh my God, I feel so dumb.
How would you? I mean, you barely see his face like close up.
I guess. Yeah. But we just saw a Buster Keaton movie, and he's recognizable. He's an odd face.
Yeah, it's true.
So yeah, they really did. I mean, they didn't shy away from saying Paramount. In fact, Paramount was pretty proud to be in this movie. So there were people, and that was a lot of other facts. There were people like Samuel Goldwyn and no one else that I've ever heard of who like would not give the rights to their name or their
But you're
anything.
Allowed to just say their names.
They were very respectful of it. Okay. But yeah, it's one of those where a lot of this, though, was the real life, the real directors, the real actors who were kind of passed by in the parade. We'll go with that. Okay. So this movie was a huge hit and would go on to be nominated for 11 Academy Awards. It would go on to win. Well, that is your question of the week.
Okay.
How many Academy Awards did this film
win? I guessed already.
Okay. Nominated for 11.
Nominated for 11.
Okay, I have my guess.
All right,
okay, Michael?
3.
I also said 3.
Okay, tiebreaker. I'm going to put another guess.
Okay.
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
I wrote 2.
6.
Oh.
And the correct answer is 3.
Damn! Nice job, Michael.
Is it 3-3? Is that the score?
It's 3-3.
Yeah.
Audience at home. I hope you did okay.
I hope you did all right.
I forgot to tell you to play along, but you know, we trust you.
You played.
So you have to remember that this film came out at the same time, same Academy Awards as All About Eve, which has the most nominations ever and whatnot. So nominated for, but did not win, Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor for William Holden, Best Actress for Gloria Swanson.
Yes.
Best Supporting Actor for Erich von Stroheim.
Is that Max the butler?
Yeah. Best Supporting Actress for Nancy Olsen. Best Cinematography, nominated, did not win. And Best Film Editing. It won Best Writing, Best art direction for Black and White, sure. And best music.
The music is not memorable to me.
It was pretty good. The opening, especially.
Was it? Okay.
Just like, not like great melodies that you hum, but just like intense.
Sure.
The movie has two quotes on the AFI quote list.
Two. Okay.
Coming in at number 24. Wait, can I guess?
Okay. So this is the
number 24.
This one lower down the list, mm-hmm. or higher?
Higher.
But higher in a bad way.
Higher in a bad way.
Okay, I think this was one of my favorite lines, is when she says, I'm still big, it's the pictures that got small.
I am big. It's the pictures that got small.
And then the other one's...
And obviously, yeah. At number 7 is, Mikey, you want to...
I'm ready for my close-up, Mr. DeMille.
All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up.
My final fact for you guys today, almost immediately a musical based on the movie was in the works. The first attempt was actually started by Gloria Swanson without permission from Paramount. She worked on the project dubbed Starring Nora Desmond until 1957.
That's so in line with her character.
When Paramount finally asked Swanson to stop. They did not give any permission for the rights. A few years later, Stephen Sondheim approached Billy Wilder at a party and asked about making a musical. And Wilder responded, "You can't write a musical about Sunset Boulevard. It has to be an opera. After all, it's about a dethroned queen."
I mean, I guess in the end, it's an operetta, right?
Yeah. So Sondheim stopped. Eventually, Andrew Lloyd Webber would write a musical that would premiere in London in 1993 before making its way to Broadway in 1994, where it starred Glenn Close. And whoa. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Bro Call legend John Flaherty was in a school production.
No. This was what do you call it?
It's cabaret.
A cabaret.
Oh.
And he chose to do this song as a solo.
There you go.
And I haven't heard of any of the other songs, so it must have been a pretty forgettable show otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not grand.
And yeah, and this was in Andrew Lloyd Webber's heyday. So.
Yep.
Which is spelled H-E-Y day. So it's not like hay as in like horses.
Sorry, Sam. You missed a conversation earlier with Michael's like, where's that expression come from? You just have so much hay, you're successful? I was like, now we know. It's not that.
So those are the facts.
Right? Those are the facts.
So that was Bam.
Time for Sam.
And now we're going to go to our next segment, which we call Critics Corner, which we're going to see what people thought about the movie.
All right, Michael. I'll start.
Okay.
Gloria Swanson proves that in the years she has been off the screen, she has lost none of her glamour. The magnetism that made her an astounding personality of the early Hollywood days.
Oh, so true.
Said Mildred Stockard of the Houston Chronicle.
Here's what another critic says. Very dated, very unrealistic, dull. Yeah, I get the character lives in her own fantasy world, but it doesn't make up for the fact that she isn't likable or funny at all. I'd rather sit through without any man with Bronzy and Reynolds to watch this again. And the editing is a bad taste in your mouth.
And that was an Amazon customer leaving a one-star review.
Brandis.
Michael was saying Auntie Mame with Rosalind Russell. I have not heard of those things.
But. Yeah, I didn't. I slurred those words.
An uncompromising study of American decadence displaying a sad, worn, methodical beauty.
Yes.
Few films have had since the late 20s, says Manny Ferber of the
Nation.
So
true. Here's another one of our critics. One of the great joys of the film is watching the way that William Holden's naturalistic performance clashes with an actress and performance style from an earlier age. Brian Holcomb, Cinema Blend.
And the last one, Lottie, an Amazon customer, says, pathetic. I'm sorry I bought it. It was ridiculous. That was Critics Corner.
That was Critics Corner. Okay, so now we have sort of an impression of what people thought of the film.
Yeah, but what do we think, most importantly, with a little segment we'd like to call...
Favorite part, least favorite part.
So I'm going to start with my favorite part.
Okay.
Oh, I said a few, but I was really excited at the beginning that there was a voiceover, because you know I love a good voiceover.
The narration is always fun.
But my real favorite part is... the main actress.
How could it not be that?
She's so fabulous and dynamic and silly, but I'm like really into it. Her acting is every line she says, she's giving it 110%.
So you like it and I like it too, but I think it is really dumb. Like you gotta say, like, I don't think it's good. I think it's just really, really stupid, but it's fun. Like I think she's doing a bad
thing. Stupid?
That absolutely is the word I would use.
It's amazing. I love
it. It's so silly and just like...
It can be silly and amazing.
It can be stupid and amazing.
I don't know if stupid is the word I would use.
I think stupid's a great word.
I just think it's like... It does seem to me... Like,
I feel like every time she's on screen, she's doing a Nicolas Cage impression. She's just like so crazy. Do you know what I mean?
I love it.
I love it too, but it is dumb.
Dumb seems just too demeaning for someone who's so amazing. Even if it is silly.
Is it amazing or is it just really dumb?
No. It's amazing.
I think it's incredibly
campy and it's weird and it's silly. What? But dumb, it's a bridge too far for me to call it stupid.
I'm a person who likes dumb things though. Like for me, it's not necessarily an insult for someone to be real stupid.
I'm probably just getting tripped up on your vocabulary and we probably find the same things fun, but...
So let's recount our favorite of her lines. Mine is when she goes, "What year were you born?" Oh no, like, "What month were you born?" And he's like, "December." She's like, "Sagittarius." She's like the crazy eyes.
Oh my god!
Like it's not like I exaggerated at all. She really is that crazy. But with
she's
eyes,
so I mean, she is clearly a silent film actor. Like the way she's so expressive. I don't know. I just love...
But it is like so silly. You can't take any scene
of her
like, seriously.
My favorite is when we first meet her and she finds out the guy's a writer and she's like, it's just talk, talk, talk.
There was a time in this business when they had the eyes of the whole wide world. But that wasn't good enough for them. Oh, no. They had to have the ears of the world, too. So they opened their big mouths and out came talk, talk, talk.
And then she's like, this, you're talking. It's ruined the cinema. Now please read my screenplay. It's just like, it's great.
It was very fun for her
so,
to answer.
What was your least favorite?
That was very
part?
Silly. So the main character is all right, but he was probably still my least favorite part of the movie. Mm. And the reason is a lot of the things he does, you could theorize a lot of motivations for why he does the things he does, but I feel like the movie never commits to one. So for example, when he decides to leave for the first time, which is a reasonable decision because clearly it's a crazy place, he decides to come back when he calls the mansion and she's like cut herself,
right?
So he's like, I'm gonna go back, I'm gonna be there. But I never get the impression that he's there for her. And I never get the impression that he's there because it's such a great gig. I never really feel why, even though those are both perfectly good reasons, if that is the reason. But I don't really feel that.
It is a little unclear.
So I'm like, why are you here? And for me, having a main character whose motivations are unclear is a huge problem.
I guess it didn't bother me that he was just a vehicle for the story because I was just so
interested. Except he is the story.
I was just so interested in her that it didn't bother me that he didn't have a clear motivation. But that is a very, very fair criticism.
But that's the thing. If there could have been, if it could have been made just slightly differently, and it would have been much better. Sure. If there was a clear, like, I'm staying because of this reason.
I think to me, the motivation was like he just didn't have any other options and he was just sort of going with momentum.
But I mean, the movie could have made that more clear.
It could have. Yeah, I agree with that.
Like, I got nothing else, so I'm going to do that. If he just said that once, yeah, go.
My least favorite might be my problem with society. So,
whoa, where's this going?
I'm a little annoyed that there are so many movies and literature tropes of this sad, deranged, aging woman. And I'm just like sad to see it again. Like, and we've even seen it to.
But
like,
it's your favorite character.
It is.
Yeah.
But I guess I kind of hate the trope a little bit. Like, we've even seen it to a lesser extent with All About Eve. You see it with more dramatic, like Mrs. Havisham, which they actually reference in this movie. And it's just like this, she has her youth, even though she's very successful and has a lot of money. What does she have? Nothing. She's so sad and pathetic. And like, and I don't know. So I love this character. And I kind of wish she went out a little more glory. Because in the end, when she just goes full on bonkers, which I loved her acting, everyone's just so sad for her. And I'm just like, you know what?
What do you want exactly?
I just want society to be different. I just...
Do you want them to be excited for her craziness? What do you want?
Or a little more horrified that she, spoiler, murdered someone. But they're just like, oh, but she's old and unpretty now. What is she supposed to do?
Okay, I get
you. You know what I mean? It's just this pity for her all the time. And it's like, actually, she's a pretty destructive person.
Fucking horrible, yeah.
And
you know, how come there's all this 100-odd years of cinema and we never get to see that with an aging actor trope, you know?
Sure. When we see William, what is his name? William Holden.
Holden, yeah.
When we see him in Network as an aged man, he's the wise one, even right. when he's a piece of shit.
Or, well, let's look some real live actors who went fucking bananas, like, say, Charlton Heston or Clint Eastwood with his empty chair nonsense. Oh, and he's just a respected director who still gets to make movies.
Interesting that we frame a lot of, we talk about a lot of these stories, right? Can I talk about a few more things that I liked and disliked? One is I actually was into the relationship for quite a long time between William Holden's character and the other writer, between the young woman. That. Just because, like, at first it plays off very generic, like, oh, she's the hot young one and he's the guy. Okay, they're going to get together. But they're both writers, so you really feel a connection. And even when they're, like, starting to like each other, you both, I mean, she had a fiance.
Yeah.
And so, but you really felt like they didn't want this to happen. He was like, okay, we're working together, but obviously we can't be too close or anything like that. I mean, there's the one line that he says that, but it was still nice.
It was nice. Can I counteract that with something negative?
Yeah.
So I guess another thing that bothered me about this film, which isn't really the film's fault as a general, this is kind of a criticism of the AFI and the whole problem with people who are in film judging what makes good film is people just fucking love movies about themselves. This is the La La Land syndrome all over again. This is how we're in the top 20 of films of all time, and two of them are about the silent era giving way to talkies.
But
right?
Here's like counterpoint. Okay. If there was a movie about you, would you not get an Oscar?
I was actually just gonna say, if there's a movie about like two siblings making a podcast in Madison, like, Wisconsin.
That's such a good, it says a lot about society.
I would fucking love that movie. I'm not saying I'm above it as a person, and I'm saying this movie obviously has a lot of merits outside of that, but this being the one of the best movies of all time does kind of, it's kind of a Hollywood circle jerk situation, right?
One more bad thing and then we can move on. I didn't like how this movie felt like it was just dying for more of a twist. There were some twists, there were some reveals.
One of the reveals I actually went like,
which one though?
The butler one.
That's the only real one in the movie, and it didn't really change anything. Oh, maybe that is the only one. But like, so he winds up in this mansion. Everything's a little weird. It's not quite as it seems, but it kind of is as it seems.
Yeah, actually, so if you're following what you're talking about, like the beginning is like, he's murdered, but how does he get murdered?
How did he get murdered?
But if you guess 15 minutes in the film how he gets murdered, you're right.
Right. There's like, well, I mean, the simplest answer would be, so she's kind of weird, so maybe she goes crazy and kills him. Oh, that's what happens.
Spoiler. Yes.
So
if you guys were planning to watch this movie between the beginning and ending of this podcast, that's what happens.
So I was like, kind of wish there was a little bit more about that. Kind of was as it
and
seems.
Actually, the butler scene, he like does all this stuff, and at the end of it, he goes, and I was her husband. And then the music that plays is like,
Bawr! I was her first husband.
And then it moves on as though that scene never happened, because that doesn't actually affect
that doesn't
anything.
Change anything.
Nobody actually cares about that.
Honestly, I actually thought it was going to be the butler because they did that twist.
Or there's going to be like, there is no Norma Desmond. And that would have been a twist. You know what I mean? Because it's so like mysterious and spooky. I thought it was going to go
but
somewhere
it's
like that.
Very obvious.
But there's like, oh no, she is crazy, but she's actually
crazier.
She's actually really crazy. So
I guess, you know what? I think her fun acting distracted me from so many flaws in this film. So
yeah, I mean, it is interesting. Let's go through the plot.
Okay, intern summary. Our film opens with a voiceover, always a good choice. He's describing the scene in a very cool way.
Maybe you'd like to hear the facts, the whole truth. If so, you've come to the right party.
We're in Los Angeles at an opulent home of a movie star with a dead body floating in the pool. Shot in the back twice. The body is Joe, the screenwriter and narrator of our film. In a flashback, Joe tells a story that led us to his death. Hey, Sam, did you say that you looked into how many times this is referenced in pop culture?
Just the movie in general.
Yeah.
Not specifically that ending.
Got it. Okay. Because Archer,
yes, Tiny Toons did do one.
That's hilarious. Tiny Toon Adventures was great. Anyway.
What's your point?
Oh, I remember it in Archer, and I'm like, but this that guy floating in the pool like that shot, I'm like, I feel like I've seen that a lot.
Yes, Archer was not listed. It's more so what? Other things that are...
It's crazy that that wasn't listed.
I have a thing to say. So the narration, I think, is good just because it's always fun to have someone talking in a cool noir way. But sometimes it got too much. Oftentimes there would be narrations like, that's fun because it's cool and it's fun to have narration in a kind of cool dialogue way, but it's not always necessary. And I think the first bit where he's like, that's Joe Gillis in the pool there. He always wanted a pool. I'm like, all right, cool. But then he's like, finally he got a pool. Like, all right, I get it. But he paid a high price for it. Like, I get it. He's in a pool. So I was like, yeah, that's my opinion.
That's fair. All right. You want to take it away?
Sure. 6 months earlier, Joe is struggling to sell his scripts. Two men come to repossess his car, and he needs a cash in a hurry. He attempts to sell a script he's kicking around at Paramount to a producer named Sheldrake, very cool name. But Betty Schaefer, the script reader, comes in and tears it apart, calling it trite and flat.
I totally agree with you about her their love story, because I love how like just self-possessed she is. She's like... So she walks in and rips the script apart, not knowing he was there. And then he's like, how dare you? She's like, I'm really embarrassed, but your stuff sucks.
Also, something I thought was like so fucking cool is like this: all the dialogue I would consider very a similar level. Whenever they would talk to each other, it got Sorkin-y. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? But it was only when they talked, because they're both writers, so they're both quick-witted.
And then they, by the way, at that point, so... In this whole back and forth between her and him in this meeting, he's like, she's like, you know, one of the reasons I really hate it is because I recognize your name and you actually do know how to write. And he's like, I'm sorry, I just want to sell something. And then it's not Dostoevsky. I'm so sorry. And then he's like, you people would have passed on Gone with the Wind. And the dirt. He goes, well, I did. Who wants to see a movie about the Civil War? It was great.
I do love her comments, though. Why is it bad? Oh, well, because it's trite and flat. Like, what is he supposed to say? Like, oh, okay, sure, totes. I mean, that's what I was going for, but I guess you don't like that. All right.
Yeah.
With no job and no money, he decides to leave LA and go back to Ohio. Before he makes it home, however, the repo men see him driving and give chase. Love the phrase, give chase.
I know you do.
Joe turns into a driveway of a rundown mansion to escape.
By the way, like, repo men come in to take his car that he can't afford, and he's like, but they'll take away my freedom. It's like, dude, if you're not paying your bills, they're not the villains here, right?
Something that made me very worried in the beginning of the movie is one of the first lines, he's like, I wrote for movies, and I was so mad. I'm like, they better refer to movies as pictures, because that's my favorite thing. And then they do a lot, which I really like.
An aging star invites Joe in. Oh my God. I forget. I actually love the beginning of this movie.
It's so fast. This is like 5 minutes in the film.
Yeah, it's fast and it is so weird. So she invites him in, mistaking him for a chimp coroner, as in a undertaker for her dead chimp. It was so weird. The actress is the film star Nora Desmond. When she learns Joe is a writer, she asks his opinion on a screenplay she's written about Salome, which I wrote. Apparently this is a biblical story, but I had never heard that name in my life. She plans to play the role herself and return to the screen.
Don't call it a comeback!
I didn't know you were planning a comeback.
I hate that word. It's return. A return to the millions of people who've never forgiven me for deserting the screen.
Fair enough.
Salome.
Oh, God, she's amazing. With Cecil B. DeMille as the director, Joe finds her script abysmal, but flatters her into hiring him as a script doctor. She is weirdly insistent on him staying in the house.
Right. And this is the thing. He should have been kind of clued in. That's why it's really hard to connect with our main character.
Well, this is kind of similar to All About Eve in the character.
It is very similar.
Character
actually
has another character who is super weirdly boundary pushing right from the get-go, but then they get surprised that they're crazy.
Joe wakes up to some super sinister organ music played by Max Butler. Max has moved all of Joe's things into the mansion, and Norma has paid Joe's rent.
But he's like,
No, Joe is like fucking pissed.
Yeah, but then he just does it anyway. Well, anyway, it's part of it.
But sorry. I was like, why are you so mad that he opened your stuff? If I knew what he wanted, ultimately, I would have maybe understood. He reluctantly agrees to all of this. She is very involved in the screenwriting process and demands maximum screen time. She makes Joe watch her old movies with her. They take drives together after his car gets repossessed, and she buys him lots of stuff.
I don't know why. I liked the back and forth when he would be riding. She'd be like, you cut this scene, but I was in this scene. And you cut to a scene that I'm not in? How could you? It's so great. At one point, he has to move into the main house when the guest house roof is leaking. We learn that there are no locks in the house because Norma is suicidal, and that Max has been writing the fan letters all along to keep her happy. I mentioned earlier that she keeps getting fan letters because people still love her. Apparently not. Whoa. Norma throws a New Year's party. Oh my God, so crazy. That's just for her and Joe. There's a full band and champagne flowing. It's great. He gets freaked out because she's so into him and goes to his friend Artie's party. He meets Artie's girlfriend, who is...
Betty the Scrubber. You like this movie a lot more than I do.
I don't know why. It's so silly, but I was just so into it. There's so few movies that hold my attention.
Because you just love Norma so much?
I think so.
We're both agreed that the main character is whatever, right?
Yeah, William totally. Holt. Except that there are some scenes without Norma that I'm still kind of into. Like, I liked the party scene, which actually is in the next sentence.
Sure. But. Betty and Joe talk shop and do a weird, cute flirt with overwrought dialogue.
I loved that part where they were just doing weird, over-the-top dialogue as flirting with each other.
I agree. Anytime they're talking to each other is really good. But it was that's also something I don't like, is that their dialogue was cute and fun, but also felt somewhat real. Like, they're both writers, so they talk this way.
Yeah.
Norma is so weird the way she talks. Like, I feel like I'm flashing back to theater and people just, overacting. Like, she doesn't seem like a good actor.
No, I love it, though.
It's just stupid.
I guess I can't defend it. I just, in my heart, love it too much.
Hey, that's fine, dude. He calls Max to tell him that he's moving to his friend's place, but Max tells him that Norma attempted suicide by slitting her wrists. Back in the mansion, but why did he go back? I don't understand.
I mean, this is like a character who lives in a time where people don't understand mental illness.
But I mean, I feel like I'm a dumb person, but I know it's like, well, going back is not going to help anything because I know I'm not going to stay there.
I guess people don't understand this. I don't know.
For me, that was glaring. Okay, so back at the mansion, Joe yells at Norma, saying that what she did was wrong and crazy, but she's the only one who has been good to him in town.
So I think that line of dialogue was supposed to be the motivation why he came back and why he helped her. Like, he's just been spit out by this town. Even though she's crazy, she's the only one who's shown him any kindness. Which is clearly crazy because he has a lot of nice friends at that party.
But it's also going doesn't help her. No. Clearly.
Well, again, this is the 50s. People don't get what mental illness is. That's fine. I'm okay with that.
I'm in the aughts. That's the 2000s. She says she'll do it again unless he loves her. So he obviously decides to kiss her.
Which we now know is bad.
Well, he should have known.
Yes. Later, Betty tries to call the house about working on the script with Joe, but Max tells her that Joe isn't living at the mansion. Norma says she's never been happier in her life thanks to Joe. In the evening, they go out to play bridge with Norma's friends, and Joe goes into his old hangout, Schwab's drugstore. It was a weird place to hang out. To get cigarettes for Norma, where he sees Artie and Betty. Betty gives him good news that Sheldrick is interested in one of his ideas, but he says no. Mm-hmm. I guess this is not the first...
He says he's quit writing.
Yeah, this is not the first movie where we've seen a drugstore be a hangout, right? That was also Best Years of Our Lives.
It's a thing. Norma puts on skits for Joe. Very good scene, including a Charlie Chaplin impression.
I really enjoyed that scene. I just love
it. It's clear that she was a silent actress.
I might really like this movie. It's one of these movies that I like, but I cannot possibly recommend anybody. I just enjoyed watching it so much.
Yeah, I like it a lot less than you do. Max interrupts to say that Paramount Studios is calling, but Norma is insulted. DeMille can't call her personally. Mm. Eventually, she has Max drive her and Joe to Paramount. DeMille is psyched to see her, but tactfully evades her question about her script. Meanwhile, we learn that Paramount just wants to rent her car out for a film. DeMille almost tells her the truth, but she breaks down about being back in the studio.
Oh, the intern forgot to mention that. While she's in the studio, all the older people who work at the studio were so excited to see her, and they were so happy, and it was kind of a sweet scene. Joe sees Betty at the studio and discusses his story idea. He tells her she can just have it, but he isn't available to work with her. Betty tells Joe she's engaged to Artie, and she's all mad he won't work with her.
She's so mad.
Norma is now convinced her movie is getting made and undergoes intensive beauty regimens to get ready for the movie, which was a crazy scene. And then I'm like, have beauty regimens really gotten that better? I mean, they're all crazy.
What was the craziest part?
Where they wrap up her head in like cloth and then steam it. But I'm like, that probably still happens.
Is that crazy?
Maybe not.
Yeah.
Joe is secretly working on the script with Betty in the evenings. Joe and Betty grow closer, and Max warns Joe to keep his nighttime outings from Norm.
Yeah, Max is like, hey, I don't care where you go, but if
Norma,
if Norma sees you, then that's going to cause trouble, so don't do that. Unexpected plot twist.
Oh, no.
Max the butler is actually the director that discovered a teenage named Norma.
So he might also be a creeper in a past life, but anyway.
He was her husband, or was her first husband, and he gave up his career to serve her.
Yeah, he actually goes, I was a promising silent film director, and he goes, all this. And the end of the scene is like, and I was her husband.
And you, do you agree that this serves nothing? This doesn't change any character's actions or anything in the story.
You are 100% correct. Okay. But I was like, oh my God!
It is fun. I mean, I like learning new things.
Yeah.
Later, while Joe is sleeping, Norma sneaks into his room. She discovers the screenplay he and Benning have been writing, Untitled Love Story, and feels sure he's betrayed her. Meanwhile, Betty tells Joe she's in love with him, and Joe is totally into it. And again, I get their connection. I get.
Yeah, they have good chemistry. I don't know. They have a really sweet scene where they're walking down a street in a set,
mm-hmm.
and she talks about how she grew up in this world, and she wanted to be an actress, and they told her to fix her nose, so she did, and they're like, oh, actually, you're a terrible actress, and she's like, I'm happy that happened, because I actually love writing.
I think she's definitely too good for him, but I totally get why they would love each other.
Yeah, I mean, that's all old movies.
Yeah, sure.
Norma calls up Betty to tell her to ask Joe about his living situation, which is, like, fair. Joe gets the phone from her and says, Betty should come over and see for herself. Norma tells Joe that she bought a revolver to commit suicide with, but that she couldn't do it, begging him to love her. Betty arrives, and Joe shows her around before saying he kind of likes his
This is another thing. I know I've said it 1,000 times. I just can't get in the mind of our main character.
So I think at this point, Joe is trying to be the noble guy.
No, okay, yeah. But here's his thought. It's like, okay, I'm going to invite her over, and I'm going to just basically tell her what's going on, and then I'm going to tell her if this is my situation, you can leave me if you don't like that. And that's basically what happens.
No.
But he's so weird about it.
No. He is not doing that.
He is doing that.
No. He's trying to push her away completely. So he's like, he's trying to.
Why?
So he's trying to tell Betty that, oh, I'm actually kept man. I like the finer things. I couldn't afford this as a writer. I love this arrangement. Because he said more than once in the movie that Artie is such a good guy that he thinks Betty should marry him. And he's like, don't. So he's like, I have to hurt Betty as much as I can so Betty will go marry Artie instead and forget about me.
Oh, I thought when he was saying Artie's such a good guy, like, oh, I just can't believe, like, he's just like, well, I can't believe she'd fall for me.
No, I think this was him trying to be noble.
Oh, it didn't come off to me, but maybe you're right. Maybe I just didn't pick that up.
Yeah. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Who knows? But that's what I thought was, because obviously he's not a kept man, you know, and that's what he's trying to say he is.
But also, like, everything he says, even if it is an act, it's real because he really is staying there.
Yeah, but. Again, I feel like he hints that she's like paying him for companionship, which technically isn't true.
Isn't there a line where he's like, hey, you haven't even paid me? Isn't
yeah,
that a line?
Yeah, that's a line where he says that she splits her bridge winnings, which is like 40 cents. And he's like, that's the only time I've ever seen any money.
So I just. It's such an obstacle for me.
I thought that was going to be a twist that she was actually poor. But
that would have been a twist.
That was not. She was actually super rich. She has oil refineries and a lot of really great investments. And she's very wealthy.
All right.
Sorry. Do you want to finish this up?
Yeah. Joe packs up and tells Norma he's going back to Ohio after all. Norma freaks out and grabs the revolver. Joe tells her it's all a lie and she's been forgotten. As Joe leaves, Norma shoots him in the back and he falls into the pool. We're back at the start of film.
I gotta say, I feel like they were just really going for that pool shot because like he's just leaving normally and then he gets shot and he like walks 10 feet to someone in the pool.
Well, I'm almost at the pool. Just hold on a second.
Which, you know, I get it because that was a really cool shot.
When the newsreel
they keep saying the newsreel is here. I think, you know, the news cameras, I guess, but that's just how.
When the newsreel comes to film Norma, she is totally cuckoo bananas and believes her movie is being made. As the cameras roll, Norma dramatically descends her grand staircase. She pauses and makes an impromptu speech about how happy she's making a film again, and ending with, "All right, Mr. DeMille, I'm ready for my close-up."
They're like, "Oh, it's your movie." And this is the scene where the princess comes down the staircase and she just like milks it. She obviously was a great silent film star because her expressions are fantastic.
She looks like a Disney animated villain.
Yes.
With her
and
eyes.
She's just great. I just love it.
I mean, she's really stupid. That's what I would classify her as.
Her crazy eyes. I just want.
Okay, here's a better one than stupid. It's cartoonish.
Yes. I want everyone to just Google her eye. Like, her crazy eyes are so good. I love it. It makes me so happy.
Well,
I liked this film a lot. Anyway, should we call our brother John?
Do you have
your phone? Because I don't have mine.
Yes, I do have my phone.
John Flaherty.
Hello, John.
Hey, John.
Yeah, this is your siblings. We're talking about the film Sunset Boulevard. Have you seen it? What do you think about it?
Have you guys sung the song yet?
The song is not in the movie, so it's not 100% related to our discussion.
John, do you want to sing it?
Fantastic.
It's a good song.
Question for Colleen.
Yes.
Colleen, are you there?
I'm here.
Are you like way off the side there? Or why are you so distant?
I don't know. It's because we're on Mikey's phone today.
When we saw the show, did we see Glenn Close in it?
I didn't see the show.
Oh, was that just me that went with Mom and Joyce? And
yeah.
You saw Glenn?
I saw Glenn Close.
You were close to Glenn Close?
Mom would actually know. So.
Oh, Mikey feels really happy about that pun. John, you were a delight singing that song. But what did you think of the movie?
So I haven't seen it recently. I saw it way back when.
Okay.
But I did like it.
Okay.
I thought it was, I recall forgetting about it because the musical was so good that I really was into that.
Did the musical have a better story, or is it just better because of the music?
Better because of the music and because, the old black and white movie is kind of, it's all right.
I feel like we haven't talked about how...
Sure story.
We haven't talked about how obviously this movie would be a great musical. It is so silly and melodramatic that, like, of course it should be a musical.
And I really liked it as a musical. I think the movie is okay. I thought it was good. I think the story is pretty good, especially for 1950, very mature. I always like a good movie with a voiceover.
Yes, for sure.
John, I'm with you.
She was creepy, but that was the part.
That's what, it was the intent.
I mean, this is a relatively simple movie, if I remember correctly.
It's pretty simple.
So what do you grade it, you think?
What are you going to grade it?
Well, I'm going to grade it low. I liked it a lot less than Colleen did.
Yeah, I'm going to grade it probably too high.
Got it. So I'm going to go with a B.
Perfect.
That's a good grade.
That's the best grade. Thank you so much for this call.
Thank you so much, John. I really needed that.
All right. Goodbye, John.
Secretive and rich, a little scary.
Secretive and rich. That's fun. Okay, goodbye.
John was very good. I probably didn't mention that he sung that song very well.
He's a good singer.
Michael, I want to hear your grade. And I want you to justify it.
Sure. This is number 18.
Right. I will agree, no matter what grade I give it, it is way too high on the list. I'll give you that.
Sure. I mean, okay. I'm probably going to give it a C. And the reason is because I don't really like the story that much. I couldn't tell you what like the themes of the story are or if they're good, but it's
when women get older, they're useless.
That's good. I mean, it is very true. I mean, they're definitely easily to discard. And it's another thing. It also reminds me of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, where just the woman goes crazy and you're like, wasn't this a crazy reveal? And I'm like, it's just so silly. I don't like it. And the few moments of real human, like people talking with William Holden and the woman are good.
Why do you just need real people to talk to each other? That's everyday life. That's not why I watch the pictures.
I love that they say pictures for films. That's really, really good. But C is exactly how I felt about it. Like, definitely don't hate this. Definitely don't love it. So C.
Okay. I'm going to go as high as B+. Because The acting was really okay. When I say the acting, she was amazing. The butler was amazing. William Holden, I actually could take or leave.
What were they even casting for? Like, did he do a good job? Like, what? You know what I mean? What did they want?
I mean, as cardboard, sure.
Yeah, that's the thing. The story's about him, but he's so boring.
It's not about him for me. My grade is solely on my enjoyment of this film, which was just every scene was so engaging that it started really strong. We got a lot of scenes with this crazy actress
beginning
just
is
being
very good.
Amazing and funny and weird. And I loved it. I loved every part of it. And it's not right. I don't give it an A.
You can be right.
No, it's not right because it's not. I don't think it's actually a great film. It's crazy that this is one of the 20 best films of all. Sam, what number are we at? Do you know?
I think we're at 14.
Yeah, it's crazy that it's this high. And again, it's clearly this, you know, Hollywood self-congratulatory thing that it's about them, so they love it. But, and what we also haven't talked about, the stuff that I don't understand because I'm not smart, I even got how the cinematography was really impressive and interesting and cool. I liked that part as well.
16.
Yeah, that's too high.
I more care about story.
I think I would have given it... I don't know if I care about story that much if I have other funny things to distract me.
The little sparklies.
Yeah, little sparklies. You know, it's kind of why I like things like Wes Anderson. Like, I don't always need a great story. I don't...
Is he the sparkly director?
No, he's the funny, like, you know, oh, I'm in an anthropology but a movie.
Oh.
You know.
Sure, that's fun.
Yeah, it is fun.
Oh, he did Life Aquatic.
Yeah, yeah.
I hate that movie.
I actually never saw that movie.
Oh, my, it's just so long. Like, be less long, movie.
No, I saw, like, you know, Moonrise Kingdom. That was really
that's
good.
That's cute. That's
yeah,
cute.
It was just, it was fun. It's not, but you're not there for story. You're there to just watch the spectacle.
Yeah, sure.
And.
But it probably has a story with the main character's motivations.
No, sense. Not really.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's a boy. He's just doing boy things. That's what Moonrise Kingdom is about. He's like, I'm going to boy around.
Anyway.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I just really liked it. But it's crazy that it's... This is in no way is this the best...
I feel like it would make a good musical.
Really?
There aren't a lot of characters. There's just the one that's good. There's not a lot of fun, awesome characters.
Imagine the butler getting a song. And imagine... Okay, but imagine if the narrator just gets to narrate in song. There you go.
But the narration in this movie, again, it's fun because it is narration, but it's not necessary. It is so just there for the point of being there.
Which is what a musical is, exactly. We did it. We figured it out. So anyway, who are we sponsored by this week?
We're sponsored by here. I'm going to tell you the first one. We're sponsored by Tyson's Chicken.
I want some chicken, but I don't want to work too hard. Maybe something from the freezer section. Yeah, that'll do. Pop it in the oven. Nope, don't have time. Microwave too. It works.
I just think they're a great company.
Yeah. They provide jobs for a lot of people.
It's
anyway.
Funny about that. I don't know why you're laughing. The second one.
14 Hands.
So we've had a lot of their wine, and we got to just say, and this is not paid. No one's paying me, honestly. It's all right.
It's like pretty all right. It is pretty good for the price.
It's what I would choose if I was getting wine. And yeah. I'm not paid to say that. No one's got a gun to my head.
But if you wanted to pay us to say it.
You want to pay us to say it, a little bit more.
Yeah, you can just pay us in wine. That would be fine.
Here, that could have been a little bit more glowing.
Anyway, thank you so much for joining us this week. Please join us next week when we talk about 2001 A Space Odyssey.
So excited for that movie.
Yay!
And? Sorry, you go ahead.
And cut!